Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Hold that thought of saying,
"Land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me." And when the morning comes, reveals the hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat. My pleasure to be with you. We've got Kirk and JB here this evening, and we're going to jump back in to where we left off, which was in the third chapter, as it is described today, of Yahshayah, which means salvation is from Yahweh, Isaiah 3:25. And fellas, I don't want to make any pretense that this is easy. What we're being shown in the context of the last days is difficult, really, for us to process. I think it's difficult for a number of reasons. One of which, you know, is that I'm right now in the 12th chapter of Volume 2, and you know, I'm coming up with this presentation of how the demise of Damascus and the rise of Islam is going to be so devastating in the last days. And you realize that that was written 2,700 years ago. Well, it would have been impossible to even envision a twisted heap of ruins because there was no rebar to twist the ruins. But that's what we see in every photograph today. And Islam wouldn't even exist.
Wouldn't even be thought of.
Yeah. For well over 1,000 years from that point. And so, you know, you're using language to describe things that don't exist. And the feminization of society that we are witnessing today is particularly in the West, where men have become a third of cosmos. And that they have lost their place in society. Who would have even been able to predict that or fathom it even 20 or 30 years ago? And so what we're going to hear about this, it seems to make sense on the surface, but there's a lot of it that I think eludes our grasp. But, you know, when just a great example, I translated Yahshayah 17 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when I translated 15 years ago, the idea that Damascus would become the epicenter of the conflict that would evolve into World War III was nonsensical. I couldn't comprehend how it would happen. And yet now, with the American invasion of Iraq, giving Iraq to Iran, having Iran take control of Syria, and then having this horrendous battle between all bad forces with America and Europe on one side and China and Russia on the other, and Sunni and Shia Islam divided. Well, now it's obvious that the conflict that America wrought by invading Iraq is going to lead to World War III. Now it's undeniable. But
you know, they,
I couldn't see it 15 years ago.
When you never
I would have thought 15 years ago that the dictator in charge of Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince, as he's called, would not only order the murder of a journalist living in America, working for the Washington Post, but that he would actually witness it. That he participated in the murder of Khashoggi all along the way. Who would have thought? And then America would have no response to it. Who would have thought? And so there are things that were just are beyond our capacity. You know, we're sharing this evening on the ride back from dinner that scientists have come to an equation that finally explains dark matter and dark energy. Of course, there is no such thing as dark matter or dark energy, but the things that we call dark matter and dark energy comprise 95% of the universe. And their answer is simply to refer to dark matter and dark energy as negative matter. Just give matter a negative sign, and the equations work out. So it's nonsensical. Works beautifully in mathematical models, but it's nonsensical. Mass can't be negative. It either has mass or it has no mass, but you can't have negative mass. But we on this side of four dimensions can't fathom six dimensions any more than Mickey and Minnie Mouse, if they were actually living beings, could fathom three dimensions when they exist in two. So there's lots of things that are just beyond our grasp. This is one of them. I think that as we get nearer to this time, we'll be able to say, oh, my, that's what it was describing. And I think there are things that are written that way that there's just really no reason for us to understand them until there's value in understanding them. And so we're going to talk about some of those things tonight. And so while I think that the translations are reasonably good, if you have a different take on what the implications are, I certainly wouldn't argue with you. I think more the better. So it begins with the passage we covered a week ago. And it reads, males of your species, by the sword, by destructive weapons of war, shall fall, along with your most capable warriors in the battlefield. You know, when the Soviet Union, which was essentially identical to Nazi Germany, Stalin versus Hitler, but same government system. When they was the test of egos, where two men thought nothing of millions of their countrymen dying to project their egos and their will. That in both Nazi Germany and in Soviet Russia after World War II, there was this enormous shortage of men. Women of marriage age, young women, outnumbered men by many times. Men died while in war. And that's what this is suggesting, that humanity is going to fall for the same ploy that humanity has fallen for so many times. And I won't speak for every country, but you know, when during the Civil War, if you were a Southerner, men felt duty bound to fight for their state. They died for their state for nothing. Sacrificed their lives for nothing. Spanish-American War was the first war where Americans rallied around the flag and thought it was their patriotic duty to go off and fight, when in fact the whole thing was a ruse to advance individual political prominence. World War I was probably the single worst example in American history, where a ship was deliberately sunk to create the illusion that it was necessary to motivate people out of patriotism, men out of patriotism, to go sacrifice their lives in swamps that were filled with chemical weapons. They gained nothing. And yet they rallied around the flag and thought it was their patriotic duty, the honorable thing, to volunteer to go overseas on behalf of political liars who were just manipulating everything for their own personal benefit. Disgusting. World War II, the same thing. Everything we did in terms of prosecuting that war was immoral. Stupid. It's not the greatest generation. It's the dumbest generation that persecuted and prosecuted that war. And what it did is that it eliminated young men. They rallied to the cause and call of patriotism, one of their most deadly myths in human history. And that's what I see happening here. I mean, it's males of your species are going to fall by the sword, along with your most capable warriors in the battlefield. Not only for nothing. It's just like America's invasion of Iraq. It's not just that American men lost their lives for nothing. They were killed making a bad situation worse. That's what's going to happen here. But the difference is that while Iraq and Afghanistan claimed over 250,000 lives. Yes, I know that the official statistics say 6,000 lives, but I've studied the suicide records of those in the armed services since those wars. And it totals well over 250,000 that have taken their lives since they came back, since what they were asked to do was so irrational, so grotesquely immoral. And they couldn't live with this. They just took their own lives. Well, that's what's going to happen. Men and women are going to fall, and particularly men are going to fall for one of the most irrepressible lies in human history. That it is good to fight, that it's good to be a warrior, that it's good to be patriotic when all those things are bad. And they're going to squander their lives. And when they do, women will outnumber men. When they do, humanity is going to be as Yahweh predicted. You know, we've talked about all the various interpretations of I want to leave you to the feminization of your society and what that means. And you know, I see it all around us. With political correctness and the inability to exercise good judgment, to be rational, to be right, to take a stand. With all of that being considered the greatest sin of society, and those who take a stand, who exercise good judgment, being ostracized from society, what we're seeing is the feminization of society. And that's what's being presented here. But there's a second consequence, and that is that men stupidly, foolishly, are going to squander their lives, making a bad situation worse, going off and fighting in the battlefield. They're not sacrificing their lives for their country, for their brother, for freedom. laundering their lives based upon their own stupidity and the ego of those who would send them. But it will never be as bad. It never has been as bad as it will be. 50 million people worldwide died in World War II. Half that in World War I, but then twice that because of the anthrax that Woodrow Wilson sought to perpetrate in the world under the misnomer of the Spanish flu. That's small potatoes compared to what's happening. The war that is depicted that is going to evolve out of the fall of Damascus and the onslaught of Muslims against Israel, and then the engagement of Europe and the United States on one side and Russia and China on the other. And you can see all of this being positioned today. We're a belligerent nation. Look at what we did to the CFO of the largest telecom company in China. Had the Canadians a prisoner. Why? Because she didn't follow American rules. As if our rules can be imposed on the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Her crime, if she did in fact create a crime, was that she violated American rules on the trade of goods that were made in America. Well, there's no justification for imprisoning a foreign national. If you want to oppose American rules on an American citizen, that's one thing. But to have the ego to think that your rules have to be obeyed and that you are the judge and jury of the world, the dictator and judge and jury of the world on what you can do with things that you buy from our companies, that's egotistical in the extreme. And belligerent in the extreme. And it continues to put the United States and China on a adversarial footing, and we're doing everything we can to continue to be adversarial against Russia. Everybody on the left and the right believing that Russia is now our enemy, and it's just nonsensical. So we're coming up to a war that's going to be unlike any other.
Can I make
this is going to be the first truly world war. Go ahead.
Well, this week, I could stand to watch it, but we know they were putting on a big show for Bush. And Bush is the main one that, I know it led up some things to the Carter years and so forth, but Bush was the main one in his attack on Saddam, as they used to call him, to destroy Iraq, which created his void to begin with Iran.
Correct.
Right. And on to Damascus, and then the difference in lines is realigning everyone.
Right.
In the Middle East, had absolutely no play whatsoever.
Yeah, it's amazing that when you look at what George Herbert Walker Bush did, it was amongst the dumbest things America could possibly do. Yes, it was in George Herbert Walker Bush's financial interest to support Saudi Arabia over Iraq.
Aramco.
Because that's who was paying their family.
Yeah.
But for America, Saddam Hussein he wasn't building mosques around the world. You know, 80% of the world's mosques are built by the Sauds. He wasn't a fundamentalist Muslim. The Sauds are. There weren't 19 Iraqis perpetrating 9/11. They were Saudi Arabians. And so this notion that Saddam Hussein was the bad guy and that we need to protect Kuwait and Saudi Arabia when they are ultimately the ones financing Islamic terrorism was suicidal for America. And Saddam Hussein was a horrible man, but he was probably the best dictator in the Middle East because he was the most intolerant of Islamic terrorism. And he was America's dictator because we used him to obfuscate the rise of Iran, the power of Iran. There is nothing America could have done dumber than attacking Saddam Hussein and forcing him out of Kuwait and precluding him from going into Saudi Arabia when it would have been vastly superior for the United States and the world at large had he prevailed over those two countries. And yet, no one wants to hold him accountable. You know, he became the groper in chief, too. You know, of all those women that said that just around him, and he would rope them from his wheelchair. And yet, nothing. You know, I was sent by one of my good friends, the most popular cartoon that was created after his death, and it shows George Herbert Walker flying his World War II fighter aircraft into heaven, and being welcomed by his wife and daughter, and you know, we're glad that you're here, we've been waiting for you, as if God needed a fighter pilot, as if God wanted a warplane in heaven, as if this scumbag of a man would be welcomed there. You know, it was the perfect blend of American patriotism and religiosity and militarism all blended together, the fighter pilot flying off into heaven.
Never mind, one of the reasons Yahweh made, you know, the Israelites wander for 40 years in the desert was he wanted all the men of war to be gone.
Correct. The most, Yahweh's favorite person of all of human history is Dode, and yet his favorite son was not allowed to build Yahweh's home because he was a man of war for no other reason. Yeah, God doesn't like that stuff.
Let me ask you one other comment. Yeah, I guess I want to put in a thing. When, a little bit later in several more verses, I was when we're talking about Yahweh made man in his image, the only distinguishing characteristic, the major distinguishing characteristics between mankind issue that existed on the planet for, 180 million years or so, and Adama, or Adam, is that he gave him a soma. And the soma, obviously, is the only vehicle that we use, the vehicle we use to be able to make judgments between
right.
good and evil. So
right.
to come up with a mantra in political correctness
right.
you cannot use that is
right.
is so opposed
satanic.
To opposed to anything logical. You have to. You
it's
have
adversarial.
To
it's satanic.
Yeah.
Political
okay.
correctness is purely satanic. It's adversarial to God. God's purpose for man is the antithesis of political correctness. Political correctness is the antidote for Yahweh's Nesama.
Yeah.
They're correct.
To embrace that.
I want to read this again, Kirk, and I want
way.
You to and JB. I want you to. I want to ask you some questions. It says, males of your species, by the sword, they shall fall. They will be brought down, falling prostrate. They'll be attacked, conquered, and they will be thrown back and cast down, along with your most capable warriors in the battlefield. Does this suggest that these men and men have died for a noble cause?
Absolutely not.
No. Does it suggest that these men were fighting to protect liberty?
Pardon me?
Does it suggest that these men are revered in any way by God?
Not at all.
Does it suggest that they were respected by God? Is it a fact that we should respect them?
No.
Not at all.
Does it say they shall fall and be cast down?
Mm-hmm.
Along with all the other heroes.
This would help, isn't it? Yeah.
But what could God say that would be any more detrimental to those who die in the military? You know, we talk about they make the ultimate sacrifice. We need to honor their sacrifice. God's saying exactly the opposite. They squandered their lives. They're fallen. They're cast down. What they did was not only stupid, it was counterproductive. He has no respect for them whatsoever. And if God has no respect for them, as a matter of fact, if he is disrespectful of them, is it smart for us to respect them?
Hardly.
No.
So God's not honoring them. He's disdaining them. So why do we honor them? And this is a really important statement. They'll fall and they're cast down. That's the warriors of the world. The troops of the world. That's God saying that they're dead. They squandered their lives, making a bad situation worse. Next. And her doorways, alas, will groan under the distress, thereby responding to this grievous situation, and she will be destitute, dwelling on the ground. When it's talking about she, God is speaking about his people, his Am. Mm-hmm. Israel, he's speaking of his children, of his most coveted place. These men are going to die on the doorway to Israel. They are going to bang on that doorway. They're going to distress that doorway. They're going to dislodge that doorway. They're going to ooze through and creep through and fall through that doorway. They're going to hurt. It doesn't suggest here that the doorway will fail. It just says that it's going to groan under distress. It also says that these men dying, throwing themselves at the doorway of Israel, is a grievous situation. And she will be destitute, dwelling on the ground. Well, that suggests that those who do make their way through that doorway and die on the other side are going to take a lot of lives with them. You know, Yahweh has, to a large degree, sought to protect Israel, but not from harm. From utter destruction.
Yeah.
He has never protected them from harm.
Yeah, really.
You know, the Egyptians harmed Israel. The Assyrians harmed Israel. The Amalekites harmed Israel. The Moabites harmed Israel. The Babylonians harmed Israel. The Greeks harmed Israel. The Romans devastated Israel. Muslims are harming Israel. God never promised to keep Israel isolated from harm. At least in Israel that was in wholesale defiance of the covenant. But he has promised to keep them from being obliterated. And so, well, I would have loved to have read this as, you know, they all fell at the doorway, but that's not what this suggests. The doorways groan under the distress. There are those who make it a grievous situation for Israel, and she will be destitute, dwelling on the ground. It's going to be a killing spree. We don't know how many Israelites are going to fall. We don't know, but we know that they will not be safe, and God's made no promise to save them individually, save all of them. As a matter of fact, I think there's every reason to conclude that those who finally turn to Yah, turn to Him for the same reason many turn to whatever God it is that they have imagined, there's no longer any other hope. And sometimes utter hopelessness causes one to reject their preconceived notions. And perhaps that's it here. There's no one left to turn. The defense mechanisms, the Iron Dome that Israel has established will fail. The IDF will fail. the border fences will fail. The guard gates will fail. And there'll be no one left to turn to but God himself. What are your thoughts on this when you read this, that her doorways will groan, it'll be a grievous situation, and she will be destitute, dwelling on the ground? Am I reading too dark an interpretation on this?
I thought it was, I don't mean to interrupt if James wants to jump in, but if I may, the Pithok, the doorway, and Micah was figuratively calls it the doorway of hope, which I thought was interesting in what you just said, because it doesn't mean that it's a lot of salvation there, but it's also called the doorway to the ark. And as we know, only about 8 people escaped there. So it doesn't mean it's not a great devastation. But it is. But they will turn to that for the hope, and someone will be saved. A small remnant will be saved. So
and 8, which was the number of infinity, of course, and everlasting life.
Right.
And it was 8 in one family. The covenant family is not multiple families here, but one covenant family. 8 representing that family was saved for all time on the ark. The ark being informed free will. And is symbolic of the Ark of the Covenant. That was perhaps a dress rehearsal, a symbolic of this doorway. You know, there were 3 doors aboard the Ark. It's only one of them that's viable. And, you know, the doorway, the primary doorway in Yahweh's parlance is Pithok, Passover's doorway to life. That happens to be the one doorway that will prevail. And it's going to groan under this distress, and because this is the greatest killing event that humanity has ever endured. And this is the doorway to life. It's the antithesis of a man's mass murders, of the carnage of war. And so this doorway to life is going to strain under that grievous situation. Now, I think, though, that your connection to Noah and the ark and the 3 doors on that ark and that 8 people out of all of humanity were spared in that region anyway is certainly foreshadow this. Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to think that the majority of Israelites will be spared. And I think in Goyim it's going to be 1 in a million.
It's hard to come to terms with these numbers, you know. I don't know about y'all, but my God, we're talking about in around 10 years, half of the population of the world will be wiped out. And by this time, we're talking about Yom Kippur now, when the numbers are just, and most of this, we're talking about Yom Kippur, the last 5 days. My God, we're 7 billion people will no longer be alive. Will no longer be alive. I mean, it's just staggering.
Isn't a way, and it isn't in a way.
Well,
I mean,
I know what you were driving at, but still.
I think it's important to recognize from Yah's perspective, which is a perspective that we as humans actually share in a way. Mm-hmm. If I were to tell you about the brutal treatment that one little girl suffered at the hands of Boko Haram, or the Islamic State, where she was beaten and raped multiple times a day, watched her mother and father be murdered savagely before her, and watched anybody that resisted them tormented and killed, and to have to endure that day in and day out, month after month, year after year. And I were to go into the tortures that such a little girl would have to endure. If we were to focus on that one little girl, your heart would just be rendered putty. But if I were to tell you that there are 250,000 little girls who are sexually mutilated by their mothers, the scale of it is hard to comprehend. When I share that 50 million people lost their lives because of 3 or 4 egos. Stalin, Hitler, the Emperor of Japan, and FDR, vying for supremacy. That the sheer numbers of it are just hard to comprehend. If we could focus on one life lost at Iwo Jima versus the thousands, the one is far more poignant.
Mm-hmm.
If 7 billion people, none of which we know, cease to exist, so that those who have embraced the covenant might live, and they might live in an existence akin to the Garden of Great Joy. The loss of the many unknown to all of us is something that doesn't really affect us. It doesn't resonate with us. It's only when we know the one individual, but keep in mind that none of these people will be known to God and none of them will be known to us. So while it sounds like this massive carnage, the vast preponderance of people are going to die in an instant. No pain. And no punishment thereafter. And there isn't a single one of them that was going to live forever. They're all going to die.
We're all going to die at some
point. Now, so what really was the difference in continuing to live in a hellish world for another 10 years or just to all be gone at that instant, painlessly?
Well, that's
actually the more merciful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the other side of the coin, and we do think about there, and I do talk a lot about that more than the others. The world is as bad as I know it is historically.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been around a little bit, and I've seen some pretty horrible stuff, you know, from down in South America on the hills and poverty and so forth. And I just think how the world just seems to be getting worse. I mean,
poorly
owned. I mean, it's just become unbelievably cold and callous, and these things mean nothing. They don't seem to care. I mean, we can't even get somebody to be polite, much less be.
No. You know, I said that when I moved down here to Florida, which is the cocaine capital of the world, people are drugged out of their mind in this state. And I have never, ever, prior to moving down here, been the victim of a hit and run. I've been the victim of two hit and runs in the last 2 weeks.
Really, another?
Yeah, today.
Well,
I believe at the time I spent down there, those were the worst drivers I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but they're not just bad drivers. They're just grotesquely immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the hit and run is, they don't stop. They don't care what you do.
Yeah.
That's the immoral part of that.
Yeah, a woman, I was sitting there at a stoplight. A woman ran into the back of my car as I was stopped at the stoplight. I got out. She changed lanes and sped through the light that went around me, just disappeared. I mean, it's so bad. There's no response. You're just numb to it. And so that's God's position. He's just numb to them all.
Well,
and there's no one here that's going to live, and so them all being put out of their misery is actually a merciful thing. So that's what I read, is her doorways, alas, will groan under the distress. They will meet with anguish, come into question. There will be a desire to reply. The population inside Israelites are going to say, what is it? What have we done? What is the answer? Is this happening to us? Thereby responding to this grievous situation. And she shall be destitute, emptied out, cut off, dwelling on the ground. That's really sad. Then in that day, women, belligerent and stubborn, hardened and harsh, will overpower, being aggressively assertive with one man approaching while shouting, "Our bread we will eat, and our clothes we will wear. Nevertheless, let us be called by your name with it upon us, so as to transfer and withdraw our reproach and contempt." I went to a Trader Joe's earlier today to stock up on some vittles, and the car that I parked next to said, "Where is the Messiah? We need her now. Mother Goddess, protect us."
Trader Joe's, that makes sense.
Sorry. And if they only knew that Yahweh was a feminine name, that God was equal parts maternal and paternal, and what that actually represented, and this is not a battle of sexes, is it? That God most certainly doesn't convey goddess or masculine pagan god characteristics, or that there is no Messiah, only a Messiah. That's even a title that Yahweh doesn't use. He ain't coming back that way. It's just so much that it's just belligerent with women. There was an article talking about the Democrats that prevailed in congressional elections. And the Democrats, that women that prevailed, all had one thing in common. Do you know what that was?
No.
According to the article, they were badasses. They were all military. Military or CIA.
Well, that's even worse.
So that they were called the badasses, so they could run and be pro-military. They could run and say, "We're tough." And it was non-political women who had no political training that were in the military or the spy agencies that were considered badasses that prevailed. Kind of what we're witnessing here, isn't it?
Yeah,
but with the men gone, and with the society crafted to elevate women, the women are going to be belligerent. And they really are. Politically, women are belligerent. Yeah. Now, this Me Too movement, it's gone to the point that it's almost like Black Lives Matter, where to criticize it is considered a great sin against society. But I am convinced that the 60 or so women that claim to have been abused by the actor that's now been convicted is going to prison.
That's
the other figure that did the shows, all those shows, as Huxtable.
Bill Cosby.
Cosby.
Yeah.
Certainly, what he did to them was reprehensible. I don't understand how some of the women, even after he abused them sexually, came back and sought his guidance and help. But nonetheless, many did. What Harvey Weinstein did to women is reprehensible. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you that a huge percentage of those women who claim to have been sexually abused that are making false claims. And I was the recipient of one of the most despicable claims of my life, the most debilitating, the most disgusting. My ex had her attorney try to control my access to my home, to my farm, my property, by claiming that my ex was afraid of me. I've never struck anyone in violence, never in my life, not even a man, much less a woman. And those who have listened to this show or read this book know that there's probably no one out there who is more outspoken against the abuse of women. And yet my ex thought it would be this great ploy And evil sometimes prevails, and of course it put me in a position where I can't even be on my own property without a witness if she's there. Can never be seen with her again. I can never be anywhere near her without a witness.
Wow.
Disgusting. Delusional. Think of how effective it is in today's society. Do you think my testimony is going to matter?
No.
No. Someone who is willing to make that kind of a disgusting lie and to perpetrate that lie for their own personal agenda, you think that they're going to stop and care about the truth as it relates to what happens, and you don't think they're capable of making salacious claims that I'd end up in jail. Falsely accused. No way to defend myself. So I can't even go to my own farm. Big part of why I moved down to Florida. So I've been the victim of it. I know what it's like. It's reprehensible. And this, to a large degree, is what is being spoken of here. The women are going to be belligerent and stubborn, hard-headed and harsh, and they will overpower, being aggressively assertive. This is the time where women have become aggressively assertive. Listen, anytime we get into this kind of a conversation, it's like talking about homosexuality. A man is put in a very difficult position in a politically correct world. Maybe it's just that having come to know Yahweh and how rational, how blunt, how fixated on the truth he is, and how willing he is to say what's true, no matter the consequence, that has shaded my perspective on life. And so I'm going to jump in here, and I'm going to share some things that, you know, some in our audience are not going to like very much. There's a difference between men and women. We were created to be different. And it's all about relational synergy. If we were the same, if we try to be the same, then 1 + 1 is no more than 1. 2 of the same thing is really nothing more than the same thing. But if we're different, if we augment one another, if we add to one another because we are different, then we have synergism that each individual, when combined with synergistically, because we are different, we become magnificent. Why is a family better when it's a man and a woman as opposed to just women? We were having a conversation over dinner tonight, and I said, one of the best means of parenting is for mom and dad to have a different approach. A child without a disciplinarian is spoiled. A child without an encourager is rebellious.
And you see that in the world today. Look, you know, we have a generation of people who, more than so than any time in human history, were raised in single homes, usually by the mother, and we have the most entitled generation in human history.
Mm-hmm. Correct. You need both. A man and a woman. One that manifests that here we're going to set some rules and have some discipline. And the other that said, the world is your oyster. I want to encourage you to be all you can be. I want to empower you and enlighten you. I want to be interested in what you're interested in and encourage you. That framework is synergistic. But one without the other doesn't work.
So how did that get lost? That was not a concept in 1950 that was not understood.
Yes, it was in the 1950s, but political correctness and socialist secular humanism sought to change society as to feminize it and to take away the male role.
But an education system.
This is where we find ourselves.
That was done on purpose, you know.
Well, yeah, it was done on purpose. Oh, it was deliberate. Yeah. Political correctness is the antidote for Yahweh's Nesamets. Brilliant. It's effective.
Really hate Yahweh.
It's adversarial. So is this feminization of society. The feminine aspect of human nature is incredibly important. It's nurturing, supportive, loving. There are so many aspects of it that are essential. But so is the male aspect. Focus and discipline and reason. Drive. Even ambition. These are good things. And we've just lost it all. We lost the personal responsibility, worth ethic, exercising good judgment. We've lost it all. We have a bunch of belligerent, stubborn, overpowered, over-entitled, over-assertive individuals. What we are witnessing is exactly what this one word, chazaz, described.
Mm-hmm.
People unwilling to learn.
And rigid heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is with one man approaching while shouting, "Our bread and our clothes we will wear. Nevertheless, let us be called by your name. With that upon us, so as to transfer and withdraw our reproach and contempt." Fellas, I can only speculate what the second part of that means. I understand the first part. I think we're witnessing it before our eyes. I think it's profound. And I understand that that women will be belligerent and hard to. I get all of that. And they're going to be that way in opposition to men. That's really what we're witnessing today. And this idea of our bread, it's kind of saying, hey, no, we're going to fend for ourselves. It's our world. We're going to set our own table. We're going to fend for ourselves. We don't need you. We're going to choose our own clothes. We're going to choose what we eat. We're in charge.
Well, let me.
And yet they will take the names that of the men.
Let me toss out a couple of things to at you, and
okay.
Just for the heck of it, you know, because we're just trying to figure this stuff out. So the call is to eat, and obviously that's consume. You can even say devour. You can say destroy. You can say even slay, even burn up. Ledim is our bread, which of course is food, but it can also be food gained by wickedness in one of the lexicons. You look at lecham.
And by the way, lecham is yeasted bread.
Yes, yeasted bread too.
Yeah, matzah is the pure stuff. That's without the fungus. Lecham is with the fungus.
Yeah. So wickedness is appropriate connotation there. Yes, lecham, which is to devour, but it also means to fight, to overcome, prevail, and make war.
Yep.
You have shimla, or simla, our clothes, which is clothes, but it's also the mantle for the outer garment. You know, we were talking about the outer garments and the status and so forth, and religious dress-up. So maybe they're saying, we want you to give us a name, to give us whatever, but I still want all my stuff, all my evil wickedness.
And that's, you can look at it too, is that a man named America. Men have established the countries that these women are going to want to identify with. Their religions were all established by men. They still may want to call themselves Muslims or Christians.
Yeah, and they will right up
or Rabbinic Jews.
Yeah.
We're going to accept the labels that men have conceived. We're going to wear them. We're going to parade around under them.
So give them credibility.
Yeah, we're going to eat our own yeasted bread, and we're going to wear our own religious outfits. We're going to choose what we do. Yeah, it's possible. It's likely.
Yeah. A saw off, you know, after you got to the name. Of course, it was closing in his car, you know, called out and shown your name, your reputation, your glory, and so forth. But Asaph is to take away our disgrace. All we want you to do is to, this guy I'm assuming you're talking to, you could say that, you know, they want him just to take away any criticism of them, as long as they can do what they want.
Right. But you notice they're not drawing near unto Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
They're withdrawing.
Yeah.
So the stand that they're taking isn't bringing them into the covenant. It's not endearing them to Yahweh.
But then you couldn't with all that stuff.
From him. So what they are doing is that where the men sacrifice their lives in the battlefield, the women are sacrificing their lives, their souls, based upon their assertion of their own power and influence and egos. Their belligerence. Leads to the same place, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So in that day, which is his day, what day would that be? This is now God's to be. Either Yom Kippurim, his day, or Sukkah, 5 days later. In that day, which is his day, living vegetation will sprout and thrive, branching out and growing, Shishmak, for Yahweh. It, or he, shall be beautiful and splendorous, and therefore approach as a glorious manifestation, along with the majestic and eminently wonderful, fruitful offspring of the land. Also gloriously attractive, shining in appearance, as the remnant of survivors of Yisrael and Yahudah. And that's the name of that story. I'm of the conclusion that I got this one right. Really early on in this process, I came to the conclusion that the story begins in Eden, because Yahweh's idea of 6 + 1 = 7. That is Yahweh's idea of that which is good, nurturing, and beneficial. And that the expulsion from the garden started a time clock of 6,000 years before we would return, and then the 7th millennia would be back into the garden. Just in the garden, as there was 2 + Yahweh, there'll be few in the restored earth upon his return. But I came to the conclusion that everything that was presented in the garden, a celebration of life, no religion, no politics, no judicial system, no military, no patriotism, no death, no dying, no lies, and that it was God and man and women celebrating, exploring, learning, liberating, enjoying life. And that all of the beauty of life, everything that life could possibly be, the flowers, the trees, the grass, the fish, the birds, mammals, everything that life was at its finest, is what we're going to see thrive in that day, his day, the 7th millennia of human history. We're returning to the garden. That's the whole story. That's why the 7th day is called Sukkah, camping out, just as Yahweh camped out with his creation in the Garden of Great Joy. Living vegetation, we're talking about a garden, will sprout and thrive. Branching out and growing, growth is essential to life. Why? for Yahweh. And he and it shall accordingly be beautiful, splendorous, and will therefore approach as a glorious manifestation along with the majestic and eminently wonderful fruitful offspring. Who's the fruitful offspring? It'll be us, members of the covenant. Yahweh's glorious presence is going to be there right along with us, and we too are going to be majestic.
We'll be
eminently wonderful.
Yeah.
In the middle of this flourishing, thriving earth that is growing and alive. That's return to Eden. Even more magnificent, because in Eden, there is no indication whatsoever that Adam or Yahweh were empowered to the degree that this states here.
Yeah.
This is we have enormous power. We're majestic. Wonderful, impressive, lofty. This is God and man together in a very different way. And not, I want to be careful here. Not different, but expanded. This, to me, is the perfect explanation of E equals MC squared. We are matter, and have always been matter as it relates to our relationship with Yahweh, who is energy, spirit, light. Well, this suggests that while matter is the same thing as energy, we're going to be multiplied to the extent that it's going to be energy and energy, light and light. Which means that we are empowered infinitely, and maybe infinity to the fourth power, going from three dimensions to four, to five, to six, to seven, each increase infinite. That's what this says. It says, if you want to know our future, look at our past, and then multiply it by infinity times four.
This is the first time I've ever seen a whole group of words, and I was looking at my long writing definition of each one of these as you were talking, and you know, there's really almost nothing that's negative in these words.
No, as a matter of fact, I would generally just say it's infinity times multiply four.
Yeah. Is
it, well, there are four words here that describe an infinite
Object.
Multiplication.
Yeah,
Shemak.
Yeah.
Sprout, thrive, branching, and growing. Shemak.
Yeah.
Beautiful and splendorous. Seve. Spread out. Attractive. Desirable. Valuable. Honorable. Second one. Therefore, approaching is a glorious manifestation, kabod, abundantly significant, dignified, rewarding, extraordinarily high in status. It's the third. Majestic and eminently wonderful, gaon. It's four. All describing what we become, gloriously attractive and shining in appearance. Tetharet.
If a glory show forth, yeah.
So,
I mean, it's the
multiplication of four leads to this shining appearance. Pure light, pure energy. So I think that even in these words, we see an affirmation of we're going from three dimensions to seven. And in the seventh, we are light.
Wow. I didn't even see that coming. When I did it all, I didn't even see it. I'm going, but that's amazing.
And as you said, Kirk,
uh-huh.
the words that are described here, Mm-hmm. There's a lot of words in Hebrew that have dark and light sides to them, right?
Oh, yeah.
These are not among them.
No, they're not. That was the thing that just hit me. It's like, wow, I didn't even see that. Wow.
Because there was no dark side to the Garden of Great Joy. There's no dark side to light.
No, dark side to light. Right.
There's no dark side to light.
No.
There's no darkness in the presence of light. And there's no sadness and joy. There's no death in life. And growing and thriving. I think that what this says corroborates what I thought was the only rational conclusion from the presentation of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, Sukkah. The only rational conclusion from 6,000 years ago being expelled from the Garden of Great Joy, only to re-enter a time of a perfected earth, of an earth returning to the conditions of the garden with Yahweh camping out with his creation between 6,000 and 7,000 Yah. It is where all of the formula sevens come together. It's where the promise and its benefits are united. I've long since concluded that that understanding of time and of matter and of energy and of Yahweh and of the covenant was the single most enlightened, empowering, liberating, and profound that we could embrace. It tells us exactly who we are and where we're going, who Yahweh is and where he is taking us, what is being offered for those who accept the covenant. If that's appealing to you, I would strongly encourage you to closely examine and carefully consider everything Yahweh has said, so that rather than being among those who are withdrawn because of their egos, or those who are killed in war because they are misled, that you are among those who enjoys this branching out and growing, this sprouting out and thriving of a restored earth with Yahweh. You know, we haven't seen Yahweh's name in a while, have we?
Mm-hmm.
As Yahweh's been describing the religious dress-up, we didn't see his name. Because there's no association with religious dress-up in Yahweh. When Yahweh was talking about the men of war, we didn't see God supporting the troops. We didn't see Yahweh's name there.
Interesting.
But now as he's describing what he's promising, what he's offering, a return to Eden, the Garden of Great Joy, a restoration as light, an empowerment as light. It's the only name we see.
That's right.
At least until the end. Because Yahweh didn't create us for anything other than companionship. And there's two groups of people that he is specifically interested in inviting into this Garden of Great Joy, the remnant of the earth. And that is a remnant, the survivors,
mm-hmm.
not the majority, those who have been delivered and remain, those who have escaped the conquest of Yisrael and Yehuda. Yahweh talks about restoring the covenant in Yirmiyah, the 31st chapter. Who is he restoring it with?
Yehuda and Israel. It's always Yehuda.
Do you think maybe there's a connection here?
I think, yes.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
at this very moment is when he's going to write the Torah inside of us, describe us with his name. And I was asked this evening, did I have a Hebrew name or did I want one? And I said, no, I don't have one. I've got a title. It's a wee tiny title, but I like it. You know, Choder. An insignificant twig that grows out of a main branch. I rather like the title. I think we all share that title. It's a marvelous title. I don't have a Hebrew name. Yisrael is a Hebrew name. Yehudah is the most Hebrew of all names related to Yah. Yehudah.
And we'll all be that when we adopt it. So.
That's good, too. That's good, too. And, you know, all I know is that when he writes the Torah inside of us, that we bear his name. That works for me. You know, we've talked about this. I don't think any of us desire power, authority, responsibility.
No.
We just want to be part of the family. Uh-huh. We want to camp out together. We want to sing songs and go off exploring.
Yeah. Kumbaya.
Yeah, and I will tell you that, yeah, stand with Yah. Kumbaya. And I will tell you that since Yahweh's promise has always been to his people, it signifies this, his nature. Yisrael and Yehudah represent a tiny, tiny fraction of 1% of the world's population. He's not coming back for his church because he doesn't have one. He's not coming back to conquer the world on behalf of Allah. Because Allah's the adversary.
Yeah.
He's not fighting on behalf of militaries because he's just said they're all wiped out. No. He's coming back and creating a perfect world for Yisrael and Yehudah. If you are opposed to Yisrael and Yehudah, you'll be excluded from his family. His family is small. Was never designed to be big. It's comprised of the remnants, the survivors of Yisrael and Yehudah. Even a tiny fraction of them. And you know, I like it that way. I've never felt comfortable in large crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Never. You know, some people are find large crowds. And in fact, a lot of people today will go off and march, and they want to be part of one of those huge throngs of people. But I don't think I've ever felt so little as I do. You know, have you ever gone to a sporting event or a big event where there's hundreds of thousands of people, and you're trying to walk through the crowd to get to where you are, and you look around, and you're just surrounded by people? At no time do I feel more alone or more insignificant.
You know, I'm starting to feel uncomfortable in that situation.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that, yeah.
I was not looking for a crowd. He finds joy in individual relationships. And we're not going to find this restored earth crowded. There's going to be lots of elbow room, lots of room to expand. If you want to get off on your own, and sometimes I like that, being off on my own. Mostly, I like being off with friends and family. Yeah.
Some of the small groups are nice, don't you think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's the best of all. And Yisrael, the remnants of Yisrael and Yehudah is a small group. You know, he didn't say that I'm going to make Yisrael and Yehudah at all glorious. Didn't say that, did he?
Hmm.
He didn't say kol, which would mean all of. He didn't say rabba, which would be the abundance of. He didn't, did he? No, he used peleth. That. A remnant. Those who have successfully escaped conquest. That's really an interesting thought. Have successfully escaped conquest.
Mm-hmm.
those are those who have survived being, survived surrendering. Those who have not capitulated. Those who have not given in to the militaries, to the political correctness, to religious appeals. They've escaped submission. They've escaped conquest. And isn't that the prerequisite of the covenant? You've got to be able to disassociate from your country, from religion and politics, from man's way. The survivors are those who have kept from being conquered by man's way.
Did you look up the letters on Paulette?
No, go ahead. Tell us.
Well, you have,
that's your,
you have
letter. That's, you are our letter man.
Oh, God.
It's funny, tonight at dinner I had a whole conversation on the letters and a name, because what I'm saying is you are a letterman and you do it better than anybody. I just love what the letters convey.
Well, I just thought, here's the survivors, the escape remnant, the deliverance, those deliverance delivered, you know, and it's a pay, which is words, spoken words.
Father God Lamb. Of a mouth,
is,
correct.
Yes, drawn in the form of a mouth, yes, and Lamb, the staff that leads.
Yeah, Lament is not just a shepherd's staff, so the words of the shepherd so far, right? The words of the shepherd, but the staff is upside down. Never would it be more apparent why it's upside down here. Because it's the shepherd's staff that's upside down with the crook down below that is only used in that manner to rescue, to lift up a fallen sheep. That's the only purpose of it being upside down, right?
And then we have the symbol next to the Yod, which is representative of Yahweh, but it's also Yahweh.
Okay. Who is holding that shepherd's staff that has the crook upside down so that it could lift up a fallen sheep.
No less with a tall, which is an upright pole, standing up, and is also often used as a mark of Zion. That's a pretty good word.
That's a pretty good word. But how many people? How many people are going to embrace Yahweh's word? Who are going to accept the salvation, the benefit of that, of his staff, who are going to accept his outstretched hand and are going to stand upright with the mark of Zion.
As I look out the one across his neighborhood, everyone has gone light happy this year beyond on steroids.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas time everywhere in this neighborhood. And we are.
You know what is interesting, Kirk, about Christmas time now?
Uh-huh.
Is I think the majority of Americans celebrate Christmas as a social event. Cultural event. As a family event, and no longer as a religious event.
Mm-hmm.
It's become integrated in our society to celebrate it as part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Well, as I look at the they wouldn't. If you were to tell them what all these symbols mean, and they've got a lot of religious ones out there.
Of course.
If you were to tell them that, they would be horrified.
Now, let me tell you, just a confession here. There is one aspect of it that I don't think I'll ever dislike. The lights, the very thing that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I love light. I love light in all of its shades and all of its colors and all of its brilliance. I just think light is a marvelous thing. There's just no aspect of light that I don't enjoy.
Well,
brother,
I like to watch it. Almost all of it. The light, I don't care that. I just love light. I'm looking here across the way, and there's
Santa Clauses and nativity scenes and things like that.
Yeah, That's repulsive.
That just makes me want to ill.
But, yeah, and I don't know if I'm, and I'm not encouraging anybody else to agree with me here. It's just that, like, I'm looking out at four palm trees.
Mm-hmm.
They're wrapped in light. And, oh, so they're just beautiful, reflecting on the water. So my hope
everybody,
would be that
everybody likes
people
light
would light them up at any time, just because light is beautiful. You know, Yahweh is light. We ought to love light.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be transformed into light. You know, light is the sign
of
the
great Jesus. We don't put up any Christmas decorations, but Patty does like the lights, so we hang up, you know, we wrap the trees with some lights. We kind of leave them up most of the year round.
Yeah.
And, you know, turn them on and just, it's just, but, you know, it's a pretty thing. I think my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, they have their whole backyard wrapped in lights, but it's year-round. They just love being able to go out there and look at all these beautiful lights.
Yeah, and that, by the way, that was something that, that I have done and like doing. But mm-hmm. I'm always sure such that the lights aren't just for this time and that the lights are just beautiful, piercing the night.
Yeah. She got a couple that do like the projected lights and it's got like snow.
Oh, I think they're beautiful, aren't they?
Snowmen and yeah, and we're loving it right now because like my daughter's favorite movie is Frozen, and so she
mm-hmm.
loves the snow stuff. So we put that up for her. Yeah, it has nothing to do with Christmas. We made sure none of it was Christmas related. It was all winter related.
Yeah, I go down to the Keys and there's a home down there that. That takes these, it takes a, it's actually a green LED light that is projected up into the tree leaves. Oh, and they're moving.
Yeah.
And it's just little spots of green light. Oh, it's just beautiful. And they run all year round. And there's a arbor that goes over the gate into the home, and it's these tiny little white LED lights that are wrapped through a bougainvillea. Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful. You know,
It's
impossible to read what we just read and be hostile to the concept of light.
Well, I'm not hostile to the concept of light. It's the connotation that is implied.
Oh, no, we're on the same page. I wasn't suggesting anything other than I'm just having I think JB and I were having a kind of a personal moment and saying, you know, that's the one aspect of the whole thing that doesn't bother us so long as, you know, it's just a celebrative the beauty of light. Light is such an inspiring thing. It's such a wonderful depiction of where we're going.
It's a shame we turn things so upside down. I mean,
it is a shame, isn't it? Yeah, even those things. In fact, that's the purpose of Halal Ben Shakar, right?
I know.
Yeah. Yahweh wants to empower women, so he twists it such a way that they are empowered against God. You know, Yahweh wants us to be strong and men to be men. And so he twists it so the warrior way to be strong and a man is to be a warrior. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's all twisted.
I'd be glad when it's gone and we start over.
Yeah, so, guys, I don't know how you have a better statement than this. In that day, which is his day, living vegetation will sprout and thrive, branching out and growing. For Yahweh, he and it will be accordingly beautiful and splendorous, spread out and attractive, desirable, and will therefore approach as a glorious manifestation, abundantly significant and dignified, a rewarding presence, attributed extraordinarily high status, along with the majestic and eminently wonderful, impressive and lofty, excellent and exalted, rising up, lifted up, and growing up, a fruitful offspring of the land, also gloriously attractive and shining in appearance as the remnant of survivors of Yisrael and Yehudah. That's why he cleaned house.
Yeah.
That's why the political and religious leaders are gone. The military and patriotic leaders are gone. The men who went off to war and the women who whose egos got the best of them. They're all gone. There's no more dome without reprint. No more cathedrals. No more religious shrines. But the earth is restored to the beauty of life as it was intended.
Well, this has got to be the greatest thing to see ever.
Can you wait? I mean, just can't wait. You know, I love life, and you know, I'm probably too soft on this. I mean, that's why I can't hunt. Taking a life is life suffering is, you know, it's really difficult for me. I don't even like watching movies or television documentaries on life and the national parks, because it's a battle for survival and there's pain and suffering.
Are you in
it? You know, yeah, I understand that's the way it is, and you know, I had a marvelous piece of salmon for dinner tonight, and the salmon. I could not enjoy that experience as much as I did. I mean, I understand that death is part of life. Now that's the whole concept of Pesach. But you know, the fact is that life's going to be celebrated. It's going to thrive. We're going to enjoy it, and I think we're going to be given the opportunity to see the beauty of the inner workings, the language that, wouldn't you love to be able to understand how Yahweh created a three-dimensional language to enable life, and how it was designed with this language, and he wrote it into existence in this way?
I just want to be smart enough to finally be smart enough to understand it when he tells me.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't you just love to have an appreciation of how E equals MC squared and then how matter is really just a form of light. Organized light?
Reduced, yeah.
Right. Wouldn't you love to see what it's like to look on three dimensions from the perspective of seven and to be able to fathom six dimensions maneuvering and exploring it? Wouldn't it be just amazing to take this universe with 400 billion or more galaxies, each averaging 400 billion stars, and who knows how many planets around each of those stars, that is 30 some odd light years across, and being able to explore every bit of it at any time you want, anywhere you want, instantly, and then still be able to exist in 4D and feel the wind at your face.
Right in the universe.
Yeah, smell the flowers. Yeah. The water between your toes as you step in a creek. Yeah.
Yeah.
The warmth of the fire, the taste of the food, the reverberating sound of the song. What can you imagine, Yahweh, calling each of us by name?
That's going to be awesome.
All of that is what we have to look forward to, and it is exactly as this one statement describes. So that's a wonderful place. So
that's a good place to stop.
Yeah, for us to
the rest of the week.
And it doesn't matter what all of that meant before, what he was trying to convey, and I think we certainly came up with some possibilities. This last statement is clear. It is what God is offering. He will be there. Will you?
Yeah.
I will be. You guys will be.
Yep.
Look forward to it.
The greatest offer ever made. And just think of how marvelous it's going to be. And it's just, I guess it's a shame in a way that so few people accept Yahweh's invitation. Oh, may God bless. Have a wonderful Shabbat.
Shabbat shalom to both of you.
I can't imagine ending, and if we were never to do another program, speak of another word, Yahshua 4:2 has brought us to the place that we've all sought to come.
Yes, sir. All right.
May God bless you all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.